from the nation's capital. This is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a real pleasure today to have Lamont Carey. Lamont's been around for a long time. He's a fixture not only in Washington, D.C., but throughout the country. Lamont spent 11 years in the federal prison system for committing a crime in Washington, D.C., and he's been an outspoken individual regarding the condition of people coming outside of the prison system. And in a world where the overwhelming majority of people who come out of the prison system are basically ignored, he's gotten an awful lot of press. Let me tell you a little bit about what Lamont Carey has done within the course of the last 10 years, 11 years. HBO with the Deaf Poetry Jam on Home Box Office. He's done The Wire again with HBO, probably the best crime and justice program ever on television. Black Entertainment Tonight, Lyric Cafe. He worked, he's spoken at the National Cathedral multiple times talking about the plight of ex-offenders. He's done a ton of media, both in the United States and Canada. He's been with Al Sharpton at the National Action Network. And he has written a book called The Hill, just out, about his journey through prison. And he's also in progress is a film, a video called Outside the Gate. Lamont Carey, welcome to D.C. Public Safety.
Thank you for having me.
Hi, man. Again, what I said at the beginning, what I said in terms of the introduction, is that the overwhelming majority of people coming outside of the prison system, they don't talk to anybody. Right. I mean, they don't even talk to their own sister. Right. And here it is that you're talking on, you know, you've been with a couple HBO productions, you've been at the National Cathedral, you've been at media throughout the United States and Canada, you've been with Al Sharpton, you've been at the National Cathedral, you've been with BET. Why is all this going on when everybody else is ignored? You're getting all this airtime.
Well, I think the difference between me and everybody else is that I'm not afraid of where I come from. Most people don't talk about the things that they think will hurt them. So I was once labeled a product of my environment. Now I use those experiences as my product, and that is how I make my living.
Yeah, but everybody goes through the same thing you went through.
Right.
What is it? I need to know this. What is it that distinguishes you from everybody else? Everybody's talking about this, but they're just talking to each other.
Right.
Everybody's going in a group. Everybody's talking to their friends. Everybody's standing on a corner. You're standing on a corner at HBO with The Wire.
Right.
Okay, so there's got to be something unique and something different in your experience versus everybody else.
Well, when I came home from prison, before I came home, I decided I was going to be successful. I decided I was going to give back to my community. And with both of those goals in mind and the developing a grasp of entertainment, I figured that I would combine all of those, and that would be how, one, I remember where I come from, but also use it as a stepping stone to get where I'm going. So I'm fearless. I turned all of that into a business. And so that, I think, what makes me a little different than most.
Okay, I'm going to try this one more time.
Okay.
Okay, I've been interviewing people out of the prison system for 20 years. Everybody wants to give back. Nobody wants to go back to prison. Everybody wants their voice heard. Nobody's voice is heard.
Right.
There's something unique about you. I mean, that I'm still trying to get at. Everybody has
I'm
said
driven.
What you just said.
Yeah, but I'm driven.
Right.
I'm driven to succeed. Underneath it all, that's what it is.
Right.
I'm driven to succeed.
All right. www.lamontcarey, C-A-R-E-Y.com, www.lamontcarey.com is Lamont's website for all the different projects that Lamont is working on. All right, let's get around to the former offender coming out of the prison system.
Right.
Okay, so the guy comes out, the woman comes out, he hits the street, and what happens?
Well, I think what throws a lot of people off when they hit the street is that they deviate from their plan that they created in prison. Everybody has a plan. I've been incarcerated in 11 institutions, and every individual that I came in contact with had a plan on what they was going to do when they come home.
Right.
But when they get home, I guess because they try to live up to the expectations of their family members. They think they have to rescue their family, change their whole standard of living, and so they get thrown off and they go after jobs or get on another route that they didn't plan for. And I think that's another difference between me and a lot of people, is that I didn't deviate from my plan. So they come home, they get, everything isn't like they thought it was going to be. Because even me, when I was coming home, I thought that all the doors was going to open with me. I was going to be celebrated as like a hero or what have you. And then when you get home and you face reality that I have to go live back in my mother's house and she's doing as bad as I thought that she was doing. And I felt those urges or those desires to want to save her. But I can't save nobody until I get myself right. So I had to stick to my plan and follow it to the letter.
Okay, but 50%, according to national stats, 50% of people go back to the prison system right. within 3 years.
Right.
That's within 3 years.
Right.
I mean, beyond 3 years, more go back. Okay.
Right.
A ton of people go back to the prison system.
Right.
Okay. There can't be mass hysteria in prison. Everybody's got to know how difficult it is when they're going to get back.
Right.
That they're going to be labeled an ex-con. They're going to go and try to find jobs, and people are going to go, how many years you spent in prison?
Right. Well, I think...
I mean, you know, everybody's got to come out of there with a sense of, man, it's going to be hard when I get back to the street. I mean, how could it be any other way?
But they don't. I mean, a lot
Are you serious?
Yeah, a lot of people don't, because you got to... Something that takes... What took place with me in prison... Prison, it's like you're living inside of three different worlds. You're living off your past. You're living off of... You got to follow the rules and regulations of the institution. Then you got to follow the rules and regulations of the convict. And then you got this future that you're dreaming of happen. So a lot of individuals assume that when they come home, that this woman's going to help them find a job, or the man that they used to hang out with, he's working at such and such a company, and he said that he can get him a job there. So a lot of times, We believing in what somebody else is telling us, so we don't see that we're going to have to, like, face applying for a job and not getting it.
So, somebody's going to hook you up. Somebody's going to take care of you. Somebody's going to give you three hots and a cot. Somebody's going to give you a place to stay, and somebody's going to give you a job.
Right.
Okay. And nobody in prison is sitting there going, dude, we got a lot of guys keep coming back.
Well, I did that. I figured that the one thing that I knew, one, that I'm not a construction worker. I'm not doing no labor.
Mm-hmm.
Two, I knew I never had a job before.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew that the chances of me getting a job that's going to pay me $20 an hour like mm-hmm. I thought I deserve with no work experience,
mm-hmm.
I knew it was impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided that I wanted to work for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that is what made me different. I didn't expect... Well, I didn't expect that they were going to give me stuff. I looked at it as they owed me, because they wasn't there for me. They didn't do this or they didn't do that for me while I was in prison. So when I come home, that they was going to give me this and they was going to give me that. But then I also had to face the reality that they weren't doing as good as I thought they were doing. But I didn't get to see that until I came home, because most time people don't reveal that they are doing as bad as they're doing. They mm-hmm. might say they can't send me no money. They messed
right,
up this
right,
week.
Right, right.
But we live in, prisoners live in a fantasy. Like, I hadn't met too many prisoners that said they was the corner boy. Most prisoners say they were the kingpin or close to the kingpin. So a lot of times, that's
everybody's on the corner.
Right. So yeah, but a lot, that's not what they say in prison.
No. But do they really believe that? Does everybody else really believe that?
Well, not really, but what else do we have to go off of? All right.
So the convict world, I mean, it's two things come to mind. The convict world is what rules the prison system, not the correctional personnel. I mean,
right.
That world is what rules. And so what you're saying is that people invent a sort of a fantasy world that allows them to exist with some sort of dignity while
right.
in the prison
status.
System.
Exactly.
All right, and status. And when they come back out, sometimes that status gets in the way of clear thinking.
Right, because it's distorted.
Yeah.
You've been incarcerated for 2 years or 10 years, and you get to believe in this lie that you told yourself. And so when you're telling people what you're going to do when you come home, it's exaggerated. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
My guy, when I come home, my man and them, they've been doing this, they've been
yeah.
doing that. They're going to give
yeah,
me about 50,000.
Yeah.
And so we come out and that bubble is burst.
Now, I have talked to, in the career of 20 years of interviewing people coming out of the prison system, I've talked to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who have made it.
Okay.
And they're all encouraging. And it really is really neat to hear about the woman who suffered through a life of sexual abuse and child abuse, and she comes out and she gets discouraged and she gets determined. And she goes out and buys eventually 3 ice cream trucks, and now she's her own woman. I mean, she's right. made her own way. She right. said, I'm not going to let anybody step in front of me and tell me no. I'm going to make my own way. I've told those stories hundreds of times, but right. at the same time, 50% go back to the prison system. Now, 730,000 people get out of the prison system in this country every year.
Okay,
that's conservatively 350,000 of those people who are going back to the prison system within 3 years, more than that afterwards. So there's two ways. The one part of it are all the success stories like yourself, people who have risen above their own circumstances, people who have that magic moment in their lives, either through God or their families or their own sense of self-determination that they're going to make it. And 50% just like, you know, you ask them, why'd you come back? And it's like, they can't give you an answer.
Right.
Like, dude, I was on the corner and somebody said, man, we're going to do a hit. And, you know, people were smoking reefer and it just got out of hand. I didn't mean to get involved in it. I mean, you know, we're not talking about unnecessarily stalking people. And, you know, crap happens.
Right.
Is the way a lot of people get caught back up in the criminal justice system. How do you make sense of all this?
Well, again, the guys and well, the individuals that I think become successful and not going back to prison, they become good at problem solving. A lot of other people let stress get the better of them. I can't find a job. I need a place to stay. And so when things are not happening according to the way that we want them to happen, we resort back to what we know.
Right.
Because one of the other things I think that ex-offenders or prisoners face is that they believe that they have to forget their whole past, that none of those skills are transferable to a positive and productive life. So a lot of them come home thinking they have to erase everything. So now they're an infant again.
Mm-hmm.
And so they need guidance on what to do. I mean, what route they should take to be successful, because they have never lived a really productive life. And so when things don't go according to plan, they return back to what they know. And the police are more aware. Surveillance is greater. More people are telling. And so that's how I think they end up. A lot of people end up back in the prison system, or those that used to use drugs fall back under the spell of substance abuse, which leads back to prison.
People have told me giving up drugs is somewhat easy. Giving up the corner is impossible. Giving up their friends, giving up their contacts. And a lot of times they just get involved in crap that they have no business being involved
right.
in. And again, it's not, you know, there's a huge difference in terms of people who are involved in criminal activity between that person who says, I'm leaving this house tonight and I'm committing a crime. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Versus the person leaving the house that night and said, I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do. I'm going to check out my boys in the corner and figure out what's going down.
Right.
There's a huge difference, and so many of these people who don't set out that night to commit a crime end back up
right.
in the criminal justice
right.
system.
Right. One of the things is that if me and you hung out before I went to prison, the way you remember me is the way I was before I went in.
Right.
You're not fully aware of the guy that I've turned into. Most of the time, you probably think it's just jail talk or jail letters when I'm telling you that I changed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had this experience. When I came home, a guy came to see me from my past, and he said, I got a gun for you.
Yeah.
That's how he remembered me.
Right.
So either the real test comes with whether I take this gun or not.
Right.
And when I refuse the gun, then he know that I'm serious
yeah.
about my change. And so I think when I come out the house to come and hang out with you,
mm-hmm.
that's because I'm bored. I don't have no plan
right.
when I have all these. I don't have a job. I don't have all these things. Instead of me focusing on them, I just get tired.
Yep.
And I say, I just want to breathe for a minute. Let me go see what Sipe's doing, and I go hang
right.
out with you.
Right.
But at the same time I'm hanging out with you, I'm observing the drug game again, or
right.
whatever it is that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's all caught up.
Right.
It all falls together.
Right, because if you're still in the criminal lifestyle, and when I come around to you, you're always thinking as a criminal. And so it just so happened, when I come around, this is the same time that you about to make a move. You about to go sell some drugs or you about to go rob a store. And I'm there. And you telling me, man, this sweet, and only when we're going to be in there 3 minutes, we're going to be in and out.
Piece of cake.
And my pockets are broke.
Piece of cake.
Yeah, that $50,000 or what you say we're going to get out of this store sounds really good to me right now, and I can do it in 3 minutes. What's the chances of me getting caught in 3 minutes?
Right.
And the next thing you know, the police outside.
Lamont Carey, ladies and gentlemen, www.lamontcarey.com. That's LamontCarey.com. Again, they go through Lamont's list of media involvement would take for the rest of the day. The Wire, which is, again, the best TV program ever, filmed in Baltimore about the criminal justice system, BET, Washington Cathedral, 10 tons of U.S. and Canadian media, Al Sharpton, a book called The Hill, a book about his journey through prison, and currently a video project called Outside the Gate, which is in progress. Okay, you've given me some really interesting pieces of insight, Lamont. Now, let me hear what you had to say to those movers and shakers, the mayor of Milwaukee, folks here in the District of Columbia, somebody in Germany, which is now our second most popular outside country in terms of people who pay attention to what it is that we do here at DC Public Safety. What do they need to know about people coming outside of the prison system? Because I'll tell you, it's not a terribly pretty picture. Most people needing drug treatment don't get it. Right. The stats are very clear. Most people needing mental health treatment don't get it. Most people who need job training don't get it. So somehow, some way, there's a disconnect, because we're saying these, if we have these things, if we have these programs, we can drive down the recidivism rate. But yet society is basically going, nah, I don't want to fund programs for people coming outside of prison. Right. So talk to me about all that.
Well, I think it should start, transitioning should start inside the institution. I guess when the individual gets within maybe 18 months of coming home, if you can get programs inside there that can get them thinking on survival of a person has to be willing to be homeless to be free.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to, if you can't foresee obstacles and how to get around obstacles, they're going to always fall. But the one thing that I want policymakers and program providers to understand is that each prisoner has created a plan, whether they wrote it down or it's mental. If you can get them to open up and try to help them stick to their plan, I think it better the chances of success. Like, I wanted to go into the arts. There are no arts programs right now for ex-offenders.
Mm-hmm.
But so that means my journey probably was a little bit harder because I had to do it on my own. But mm-hmm. I was willing to be homeless to be free.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I would say programs that can help an individual think. Another thing is the college programs back into the prison system. When that was a kind of an eye-opener for me to let me know that I had transferable skills.
Because mm-hmm.
when I was in the college program, I was in taking up business management, and they was talking about distribution. And I was like, I know distribution. Supply and demand. I know that. You know, from the street life.
Yeah.
But what school allowed to happen was it showed me that I wasn't as inexperienced as I thought I was. So, and it, I thought it's been said that a person that get a degree in prison is less likely to reoffend.
It is probably, out of all the research, the best statistic that we have. The people who come out of prison with a associate arts degree or a bachelor's degree have the lowest rate of recidivism.
Right.
Bar none. And when I say the lowest rate of recidivism, I'm talking about saving taxpayers literally millions upon millions of dollars and saving victims of crime from being re-victimized. So when I use those words, recidivism, that's what I'm talking about. So go ahead.
So those are two things. And since the parole officer is really our first interaction,
right,
after the media family,
yeah,
it's being taught in prison by guys and females that have been sent back to prison for parole violations. So they say the parole officer is out to get them,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So even for me, when I came home, I was on edge with the parole officer because I've been told that's all they're trying to do is send me back to prison. And so that has to be, that misinformation has to be broken. It has to be explained to the individual. Chances are the most you're going to see your parole officer in your first 16 weeks, well, at least in D.C., is like three times a week.
Right. There's a lot of contact in D.C.
But that is only for, like, I think the longest I've been inside my parole office, unless I was running my mouth,
yeah,
was 10 minutes.
Right.
So we're talking about 30 minutes out of a week.
Right.
1 hour out of a 1 day. So you giving up 1 hour out of 23 hours.
Right.
All they're going to, most of the time, all the parole officer said is, have you had any rearrests? Have you been getting high? Do you have a job? You answer those questions and move on.
Right.
And so I think parole officers have to first understand that that's how the individual is looking at them as an enemy, because that's what we taught.
Sure.
And so I think the best way to break through that is parole officers say what it is that you really want to do.
Mm-hmm.
My job is to make sure that the public stays safe, that you transition, that you get a job and all that. But what kind of job do you really want?
Mm-hmm.
Because when I first met my parole officer, I'm sure when they asked me what kind of job did I really want, I said it doesn't matter. And I said that so that the parole officer won't see me as a troubled person.
Right.
But that ain't my truth.
Right.
My truth is that I ain't going to work construction, but I'm not trying to start off this relationship on bad terms.
You want to game the parole officer.
Right.
Right.
Well, not game them. I just don't want to be beefing with them.
Right. Sure.
So I'm going
to
say.
And the way to do that is to say as little as humanly possible, right. Nod your head up and down. I go, right. Yeah. Don't worry, man. I'll do it.
But if the parole officer say, okay, Mr. Curry, I understand that you have to get a job. It's my responsibility to make sure that I'm encouraging you to get a job. But what kind of job is it that you really want? So when you go out and apply for jobs, you're not only just applying for jobs at retail stores or low-end stores, but you're also applying for jobs that you really want to work at.
All right. Now, what happens? Okay, so there's a plan. I'm writing all this stuff down. The plan in prison, and it would be nice if there were programs in prison for mental health, substance abuse, and you person without job training actually got job training, or
right.
A person who wanted a college program could go to a college program, although that carries tremendous controversy. In Maryland, whenever we talked about college programs, we'd get 100 angry letters and phone calls basically saying, I can't afford to send my kid to college.
And that's understandable. That's truly understandable.
Why am I giving this guy who stuck a gun in somebody's head and threatened to pull the trigger and took money from him, why am I giving him a college education out of my pocket, but I can't? So there are controversies involved.
Right.
But we know that the more training, collegiate programs, therapy programs that you have in the prison system, the better prepared you're coming out, and to have a realistic plan is to deal realistically with a parole and probation officer, what we call community supervision officers here in the District of Columbia. What else do people know? Need to know.
Another thing is who they come home to. I know for me, when it was time for me to go off for parole, I had to give an address to where I was going to be staying. And for me, that wasn't the actual address where I was going to be staying.
Yeah.
But I'm going to give you what I'm going to give you so I can come home.
Right.
And so
you got to live somewhere.
Right. And so the problem that I see with a lot of individuals is that they meet somebody in prison.
Mm-hmm.
They meet a girl or a dude in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And they be paroled to those people.
Right.
And they've never lived with those people.
Right.
And so they find out they can't live together.
Right.
They not getting along.
Right.
And so that creates a problem. So now I'm rushing because I got to find additional housing. So if you can set up something where the person, the returning citizen, has housing, maybe a transitional home. A transitional home, I think, is actually will be better than a lot of places that
you need a legal place to live, because the guy comes out and his sister takes him in, and suddenly he's beefing with the sister's husband, and he needs to go someplace legal for 3 weeks or someplace legal for 3 weeks.
Right.
Okay. What else?
Now, for the substance abuse people, it's kind of hard for me because I've never dealt with that, but I do know individuals who was addicted to drugs before prison but didn't use drugs the whole time in prison.
Right.
And so when they come home, they begin to use drugs again.
Right.
So we got to find out, like, what are those triggers? What are those triggers? And the only way you're going to find that out, again, the parole officer is the person that can get the information to actually do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
But there has to be a relationship established with the an open relationship where I can trust my parole officer.
Isn't that hard? I mean, the parole officer's got this large caseload. We're talking about not in D.C. We've got some of the best caseloads in the country. But throughout the country, you've got huge caseloads. How are you going to establish that relationship with that person? He doesn't trust you. You don't trust him. How do you get to that point where you help out each other?
Well, one another good thing about with D.C. is the faith-based community.
Yes.
So when I came to my parole officer, next thing I know, they were sending me over to a church,
right,
meeting with a guy, Gene Groves, and Miss Keels.
Right.
And so they took the time to say, Lamont, what it is that you really want to do? And I was like, I just want to work. So they said, okay, they called a restaurant and got me a job at the restaurant. That lasts 24 hours because I didn't really want to work for nobody. I wanted to work on my own. So after that experience, they was like, all right, okay, Lamont, what it is that you really want to do? What kind of job that you really want to be working? And so I told them, this is what I want to do. I want to work for myself. And so when I conveyed that to my parole officer said, well, Mr. Curry, you have to be working to be in the street.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to start a company where you're going to be able to pay yourself, or you need to get a job. And so I went and I started a LLC, a Lecurry Entertainment. And I started off with something simple as selling socks,
right,
on the corner.
Right.
And I just kept taking that money, turning that money over, using the profit to reinvest. And then eventually I went in the studio and recorded a CD.
The faith-based program we have here in the District of Columbia is one of the largest also in the country. And having people truly who volunteer.
Right.
To come to your aid, to be a mentor,
right,
that has helped a lot of guys and a lot of women cross that bridge.
Right.
It's an amazing program. All right, what else? We're in the final minutes of the program. Okay, we got about 3 minutes left.
Okay, the next thing, for parole officers, when you got a guy or a female that you're having problems with, I think if we open up and create a situation where they can go talk to the young people, because all of us want to get back. Like,
yep,
you said, all the guys and,
yep,
the females you talk to want to,
yep,
get back. So if you give us an opportunity, instead of send us back to prison, make us do some community service at a youth facility or something where we're telling them about, if you keep going down that road, this will end up. Because nobody going to say go out and get high. Most of the time they're going to try to show themselves in a good light, and it's going to be connecting back to what they said they wanted to do in prison.
All right. What about all of the issues that I started off with, this second half of the program? I mean, most people aren't getting drug treatment. Most people aren't getting – I mean, you're letting us off the hook here. I mean, there's got to be programs – I mean, if a guy comes out and he's schizophrenic and he comes out of the prison system, that medication is going to keep him in many ways,
right,
out of prison, keep him out of trouble, keep him from hurting somebody. I mean, there's got to be some sort of program set up where that person's getting their medication. There's,
right,
got to be some sort of setup where somebody's knocking on his door saying, are you taking your medication?
Well, I think even people that suffer from severe mental illness that haven't even been in prison, they pushing them out in the street.
Right.
So it's going to have to be another look taken at that, because I don't really have an experience that. It's hard for me to say, but even I had issues. I became an introvert.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
In my apartment, everything that I needed was in one room, and I got a whole empty house. So, again, the parole officer is probably my lead person.
Final minute of the program. What is fair in terms of how people look at you? They look at you as criminal.
Okay.
When you come out of the prison system, you look at yourself as something else.
Right.
What's fair? What should the rest of us know about people coming out of the prison system? How should we view them? Because if you watch television and if you watch Hard Time and if you watch Lock Up, I mean, you don't want to touch anybody that comes out of the prison system with a 10-foot pole. What's fair in terms of how people should see you?
Well, I think they should look at themselves. We've all made mistakes, and now I came home. You can't judge me by my past, but you can. But it doesn't stop me from doing what I'm going to do. Regardless if you look at me like a criminal, I'm still going to continue to be and do what it is that Lamont Curry is going to be, and that's successful.
Lamont Curry, it's a blast having you. I want to have you back in another 6 months and find out where you're going with all these programs. Lamont Curry, www.lamontcarey.com. Currently, with all the other things that he's done, he has a book, The Hill, His Journey Through Prison. prison and outside the gate, which is a work in progress, a video in progress. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. Thanks again for all of your cards, letters, emails, telephone calls, and suggestions. Have yourselves a very, very pleasant day.